Well, good morning, and I greet each of you in Jesus' name. How many of you have ever gone to a restaurant and decided to get an appetizer and filled up so much on appetizer that you weren't sure you needed a meal yet? And that's kind of how I feel this morning. I feel I've really been blessed by being here, the devotions, the Sunday school, the songs. Looking unto Jesus, it was a good, went well with what I planned to share, but also the songs, there were several things, some lines I would like to pull out and share before we get into the message. In How Shall the Young Secure Their Hearts, it talks about in the third verse, I hate the sinner's road. I hate my own vain thoughts that rise, but I love thy law, my God. And that kind of jumped out at me. I hate my own vain thoughts. And then we sang, and I'm not sure I have the right song now. The song we just sang talked about Jesus finding true pleasure in Jesus. It was the last line, and that being our treasure. And I'm like, wow, you know, sometimes I feel like we get glimpses of that, and yet my own vain thoughts so often look to the wrong place for the pleasure and fulfillment and richness in my own life. And so just, some of the thoughts out of the songs that we sang there, and challenge to my own life. And just wanted to bring that out. Has your life ever flashed before your eyes? What does that mean? Sometimes we hear people say, my life flashed before my eyes. Or maybe you hear, that phrase means to experience a rapid, vivid, and panoramic review of one's life memories. A phenomenon often associated with near-death experiences or a moment of death. That didn't 100% happen to me this past week, but in a little way it did. And already we rode together, Nelson Delbert and I rode out to the ministers' meeting together, and I shared some of this story with them. But I was asked there at the quarry to run a man lift. And I'm not scared of heights, really, but I was asked to run a man lift about 80 feet into the air, and I'm not that comfortable running a man lift. I don't have that much experience on running it. And so it was probably thinking about my own lack of experience and weakness in running that machine that had me probably a little more on edge about being up that high than what was really necessary. And however, as I was going up, about halfway, I paused for a moment. And as I told the men I was working with later, I had a little moment with the Lord on the way up. And while that was, maybe that sounds a little humorous, it was real, because I had to pause a moment and think, you know, if this thing falls, my life is over. Likely. And the machine did what it was supposed to, even with my lack of experience. I knew how to run it, but you know, when you haven't run something a lot, there is more prone for an accident or error to happen, right? But it performed well, and everything went well, and I'm here today. And But it was a real moment. A real moment of considering death. If I was ready to go. And your mind starts spinning. It does some of that review. And like I say, it probably wasn't 100% having my life flash before my eyes. But it was a real moment there. And I tell you that story as kind of a springboard of why my mind went, I believe, the subject we're going to talk about this morning. And the title I have is, Why Redeem the Time? There are two verses in the Bible, and you don't have to turn to them. They're not very long at all. But there's two verses that talk about redeeming the time. Ephesians 5:16 says, redeeming the time because the days are evil. And Colossians 4:5 says, walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. And as I looked up, what all is the context? What are these verses trying to say about redeeming the time? Redeeming the time, it means, a couple commentary thoughts I found. It means living lives noted for holiness, deeds of mercy, and words of help. That was one commentary. Another one said, making the most of every opportunity. Contextually, or to put that in context, the specific opportunity in view is that of exposing the sins of the lost and being a witness to them. So redeeming the time, investing in other people, telling the lost about Christ, and alongside of that, living a life that it says is noted for holiness, deeds of mercy, and words of help. We have opportunity while we are in time to live redemptively and tell others about the truth. We're going to talk just briefly about the fact of time itself. What is time? Someone school age here, tell me, when did time start? Oh, all these hands, I'm not sure who to pick. Preston, when did time start? At creation. You're right. When God created the earth. That is the start of time. And we are part of that. We are a little slot in that whole picture. But that was the beginning of the time. And now it just keeps going and going. It's going to go forever, right? No one can stop it. God started it, and He is the one that will end it. We all live in this time. We're all experiencing it right now. Time is happening. And since the beginning of time, many people have come and gone. And they come in the scene of time for a few years maybe, and then they go off the scene of time. But time is still going. Their time is over. But the world is still going. We are here today. But the day will come when each one of us here will no longer be part of time. So in thinking about that, in thinking about our lives in this time, we're not going to stay on this, but there's a real part of we almost can't separate the two, although they are technically a little different. I think this may have been shared here before one time. I know a while ago I had run across it, and I don't remember when it was, but I'd like to read a poem called The Dash. I read of a man who stood to speak at a funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on the tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noticed that first came the date of birth, and spoke of the following date with tears, but said that what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. For that dash represents all the time they spent alive on earth, and now only those who loved them know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we lived and loved and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you'd like to change? For you never know how much time is left that can still be rearranged. To be less quick to anger, to show appreciation more, and to love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we treat each other with respect and more often wear a smile, remembering that this special dash might only last a little while. It will only last a little while. So when your eulogy is being read with your life's actions to rehash, would you be proud of the things they say about how you lived your dash? And this poem, it's emphasizing the importance of how we use our time in life, especially in light of how we relate to the people around us, our relationships. And I totally agree. It's 100% important and relevant. It's a real part of what we're even going to be talking about this morning. But the significance of the dash goes even deeper than our earthly relationships. Why? Because the dash of time is running out. And then what? Talked about that, the two aspects of time. Time as our opportunity in life and time of the earth. As long as the earth continues, there will be the thing of time. But inevitably, each of us will reach the end of life and our time will be over. We're not going to spend a lot of time just differentiating between the two because it's tied closely together. But we are going to think today about the end of time. Revelation 10, verse 5 and 6 says, "And the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven and sware by him that liveth forever and ever, who created heaven and the things that therein are, and the earth and the things that therein are, and the sea and the things which are therein, that there should be time no longer." Time is coming to an end. Time started in Genesis, and we're in the book of Revelation, and the last book of the Bible, clearly saying it's coming to an end. Everything, this world and everything in it. And the big question, what happens at the end of time? Judgment. Judgment follows time. And it's judgment of what we did with our time. Judgment of the dash between the dates. So the first section I'd like to look at is judgment of the believer. And there's some of these things we don't talk a lot about, and if I have something a little wrong, I invite your criticism to correct me. But I believe you may turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 10 through 15. And this passage may refer more to a pastor or a teacher, but I believe the principles that apply to a pastor or a teacher, a lot of them apply to any believer as well. And so I believe it can apply to any believer. 1 Corinthians 3, start reading at 10 to 15. According to the grace of God, which is given unto me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereon. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. For other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now if any man build upon this foundation, gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, every man's work shall be made manifest. For the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. If any man's work abide, which he hath built thereupon, he shall receive a reward. If any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss, but he himself shall be saved, yet so as by fire. And the point under this is talking about believers. And a believer's work is going to be judged. It's going to be tried. It talks about fire in here. The fire is indicating the pure judgment of God or Christ. And it says, every man's work will be manifest. We might say it will be made known. It will be exposed. It will be clear what the works were. And I can't explain it all, but it says some people's works will be completely burned, destroyed by that pure judgment. And it indicates they will be barely saved from damnation itself. I believe this points to the fact that a true believer's life must and will produce fruit for the kingdom. The scary thing about being weak and producing kingdom fruit is there's a very thin line between those who are actually saved and those who are deceived about their salvation. We're not going to read it, but in Matthew chapter 25, we have three familiar examples. Examples of people who seemingly were so close and yet did not make it. Some did and some didn't. In verses 1 through 3 there in chapter 25, it talks about the wise and the foolish virgins. Five made it. All 10 were on their way to the wedding, but the 5 foolish ones never made it in the door. They made it to the door, but they couldn't get in. Something was wrong. They had not properly planned and prepared. Verses 14 through 30, we have the 3 servants who were given the 5, the 2, and the 1 talent. And the servant with the 1 talent, he was the master servant, but he took that talent and he buried it. And when he came back, the master came back. His master was wroth and he was cast into outer darkness where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. These were stories from Jesus. The last ones were in verses 31 through 46. And it's that passage where he talks about the people said, Lord, when saw we thee hungry, thirsty, naked, sick, and imprisoned, and did not minister? And he says, I never knew you. So where's the line? God knows where that line between a weak Christian and a fake Christian is. But do we? Those people in that story, in those parables from Jesus, they didn't. God is a perfect judge. Do I know my heart? Do I know my motives behind my choices? Do we examine the fruit in our lives that we're producing? Whether or not it's fruit building on top of the foundation of Jesus Christ, are our lives producing fruit of gold, silver, and precious stone? And that has the idea of living true and consistent doctrine, what Christ taught, from pure heart, pure motives, or of wood, hay, and stubble, and that has the idea of falsehood, hypocrisy, compromise, wrong motives, hidden. And it says, it indicates that's going to be burned. The gold won't burn. The silver and precious stones won't burn. But the hay, wood, and stubble will burn. Are we producing, our lives producing fruit that will burn or fruit that will remain through the fire of God's judgment? Can we confidently say, as Job did in verse chapter 23, verse 10, but he knoweth the way I take, when he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. The second part we're going to look at is judgment of the unbeliever. And you may turn to Revelation 20, 11 through 15. Revelation 20, 11 through 15. And I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the book, according to their works. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them, and they were judged, every man according to their works. And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. These verses describe judgment on one who has not made Christ their Lord and Savior at the end of time. Whether it's one who has turned their back on Christ or one who never gave their heart to Him, describes the terrifying judgment of a guilty one before the holy and righteous judgment of God. Everyone and everything that falls under God's wrath will be cast into the lake of fire. It will be eternal separation from God. It will be a place of torment. And like we looked at in Jesus' words, Jesus knew what he was talking about when he said that servant is going to be cast into the lake of fire where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Jesus knows what that will be like. The next part, our response as a believer. What is our response as a believer to knowing that judgment is coming? You can turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. We'll read verses 9 to 11 and then 14 and 15. 2 Corinthians 5. Verse 9, wherefore we labor that whether present or absent, we may be accepted of him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things done in his body according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad. Knowing therefore the terror of the Lord, we persuade men, but we are made manifest unto God, and I trust also are made manifest in your consciences. And we'll jump to verse 14. For the love of Christ constraineth us, because we thus judge that if one died for all, then we're all dead. Verse 15, and that he died for all, that they which live should not henceforth live unto themselves, but unto him which died for them and rose again. And I'm going to give you several points, and then I will... I have 2 points under this. Verse 9, it talks, we labor that we may be accepted. And he follows it up in verse 15. He says that they should live unto him. And I want to be very clear on this point, because works is not what saves us. True faith alone in Christ Jesus saves a person. But true faith will produce fruits of righteousness. Works that are called gold, silver, and precious stones, I believe. These works are daily choices that show whether or not we hold kingdom values and pursuits over worldly ones. Daily choices we make, write the script of that dash between the dates and how we will be judged at the end of time. And point number 2 is we tell. It says we persuade others about the coming judgment. Amplified says here, we persuade people to be reconciled to him. We try to help others by telling them what is coming. What is coming, it said it in verse 10. We must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. The time to get ready will come to an end, and then is the judgment. So the proper response for the unsaved to the knowledge of this coming judgment . First one is fear. Revelation 6, verse 17 says, "For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand?" The verse implies that no one will be able to stand before the wrath of God. And so a proper response, knowing that we can't stand before God unsaved, is fear. I'd like to read Matthew 10, verse 28. It says, "And fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." There is no one we need to fear more than God himself. God has the power to decide where we belong. Hebrews 3, verses 12 to 15, the second point is take heed. Hebrews 3, 12 through 15 says, "Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through deceitfulness of sin. For we are made partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end. While it is said, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts, as in the provocation." And I know he's kind of writing to the church here. But I believe it applies to anyone who hears the gospel, who has the gospel, and rejects it. He says, take heed. Give attention to the truth. And the last point is, open your heart to Jesus' call. He says there, "Today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts." So the 3 points, the 3 responses of the unsaved: fear of God's judgment, take heed or give attention to the truth. And the third one is open your heart to Jesus. You know, the devil wants to fill us with excuses and lies. Things like, I'm young, there's plenty of time to get right with God. I just want to enjoy life. Just want to do what, yeah. And we're not promised tomorrow. We're not promised how long the dash between the dates will be. Now, typically that's the same length no matter what the dates are. But we're not promised the length between the dates. And one quick example I thought of was the story of the rich fool there in Luke chapter 12. He says, you know, I'm going to tear down my barns and build greater, and soul, take thine ease. That was his attitude. But in verse 20, but God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? You see, he made these plans. He's going to take care of himself. He's all set. He's just going to selfishly enjoy his wealth. And God took it all from him, seemingly, that night, before he could ever even enjoy it. And none of us has the promise of tomorrow. How does that affect my view of today? How does that affect my choices for today? And I thought of that quote, live every day as if it could be your last. Now, you could take that several different ways, right? There's some ways that might be a little questionable if you want to just try to take that and run. Well, this is the last day. I want to have as much fun as possible and live it up. But what's the serious points that we can pull out of that quote? What is it trying to tell us, I believe? And 3 points. Focus on values. We need to stop and consider what actually matters in life and focus on that. And number 2 is forgive the past. We need to let go of disappointments. We need to let go of failures. If it's our part, we need to make them right. But don't carry them along. Let go of the baggage and burdens that want to drag us down. Work through them properly and let them go. And 3 is appreciate the present. Live in and enjoy the moment. Enjoy what God has given you. Be grateful for what you have. In closing, I'd like to read Psalm 90, verses 11 and 12. Who knoweth the power of thine anger? Even according to thy fear, so is thy wrath. So teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. And I like to read that in the Believer's Bible commentary. It says, the man of God stands in awe of the power of God that has been awakened in anger. Anger at sin. Who, he wonders, can reverence him adequately when one considers the immensity of his wrath? No one. No one aside from knowing Jesus Christ. This much is sure. It should make us value every day of our lives and spend each one in obedience to him, and in such a way that it will count for eternity. So I let you with the question. The title was, Why Redeem the Time? And I let you with the question, how will you choose to redeem the time God has given you this day or this week? You may kneel for prayer.